Thanks, Ken. Just an update for you. I have not taken the time to send you a personal note on the name of the new book that I'm reading. I finished with Experience Your Perfect Soul, I guess about 3 weeks ago now, and I've been reading from There Is Neither I Nor Other Than I, There Is Only by A. Ramana. And as Regina spoke about this morning, during her time in the sanctuary, this is from the Aham Center, Meditation Center in North Carolina, that both she, Jay, and Karen Worth, in particular, goes quite often for their I Sit silent retreats. I have been invited a couple of times and have yet to make it. There's always been a scheduling conflict with something else going on. As a matter of fact, their next one is in November, shortly after we get home from Italy, and so I will miss that one too. But one of these days, I definitely will make it to Aham for that experience. But Karen had shared with me about this book, and so I thought I'd give it a go. And I've been reading it for the last, like I say, 2 or 3 weeks. And I just want to share some. I listened to my own recording from last week. I don't do that very often because I just don't want to hear myself. And when Regina asked me to do this speaker spotlight, I didn't hesitate to say yes. At the same time, I can't tell you that there wasn't some trepidation. And I'm never really sure why. Sometimes for me, this time of the evening, and I realize it's only 8 o'clock my time, Eastern time. But I'm an early to bed, early to rise person. And so this time of the day, I'm kind of winding down. And so I'm a little on the tired side. But I do know that any time I've ever experienced that before, when it comes to sharing, as soon as I start to share, the energy just seems to come. And so I trust that that will also be the case today. In addition, I noticed that I'm a person of routine, and this is out of my ordinary routine to be speaking at 8 o'clock at night, in the room, in the sanctuary. And so I just really notice how, I have a routine just in life in general, and even in visiting the sanctuary to listen to speakers, it seems I have a routine with that. There are certain speakers I listen to, certain times I listen at, because my routine in those other parts of the day involves something else. And I was thinking how often that must occur for others as well. Usually, when you come into the room and look at the group of people that are in the room with you, it's generally the same group of people because they also have a routine. Rituals and routines for sure. And so when I was doing the list today, I asked you guys from the reading this morning. Hebrews has been telling us to let go of our dreams, to let go of our dreams, to look at the thoughts that make me proud, to look at the thoughts that make me feel good about me, happy about being me, make me feel luckier or better than someone else. And it goes on from there to say that these thoughts, any of these thoughts, are just the dust of dreams. They have no value whatsoever. And it goes on to say, can you imagine letting go completely? Everything I value, everything I value. And I stopped to consider what I value. And on the top of the list, what came up first was security. Because security encompasses many smaller subsections, like the security of a safe home, a clean home, a space to live where there's that sense of home sweet home, or feeling comfortable, at ease. There's the security of finances, where there's always that safety of enough money not to worry about, you know, simple things like paying the bills and living expenses, let alone having some sort of nest egg for, you know, some future time we call retirement, or when for instance, my husband isn't still working. I'm not actively working at all, but he is. And so he brings in an income that supports me as well. So financial security figures into that as well. And then the security of good health was another one that came up, because it seems much more desirable, better, good, great, in fact, when my health is intact and there are no mental concerns, no ideas floating around in the mind about being sick or what might be. For instance, we had a friend contact us today to say that he would be starting chemotherapy tomorrow for a cancer that was discovered just last week. And those kinds of phone calls certainly get the mind going in that direction. And it made me reflect once again on this idea of my own health. And as we age, it generally doesn't get better in that arena. And so, as some people, my dear friend Steve always says, getting old is not for the faint of heart. And so being grounded in this self that Regina was just having us recognize as pure awareness is where the security ultimately comes from. None of this other stuff that I'm speaking about. But I was examining, imagining letting go completely these things that I still do value. I value meaningful relationships, those in which, you know, the majority of the time there's peaceful interaction, good communication, affection, caring, concern in the way of, you know, you want the best for your partner and yourself, and you want the best for your family and the world in general at large. And the question beyond that was, do I feel no loss in this imagining, you know, this imagining of giving up all of this, giving up the security of a home, financial security, health, meaningful relationships? And that's what Hebrews has been all about. Do I feel no loss when I imagine that these things are actually possible, that this state, if you want to call it a state, because I don't really know how else to word it, this state of pure awareness only, where the primary focus is that, and not any of these other things that I just spoke of. Do I feel no loss in giving up these other things? And what about other people? Do I feel no sense of loss when I think about letting them go completely? Like, even if they were to die, would I be completely secure, feeling happy? Would I be happy nonetheless, no matter what was occurring? And it said, if no is my answer to any of it, my desire for dreams continues. And the note I made to myself was, this is a desire for suffering, for suffering. And you know, it's hard to look at it. It's hard to look at that this is really the desire for suffering. It says the dream is, and just like Regina was reading from the teachings of Inner Ramana, that idea that dreams will go on their own if you hold no attachment to them. They just disappear, as the Course says. The Course uses the word disappear, and that used to just bug the hell out of me, because it's like, how do things just disappear? That seems impossible. But it says they go on their own. When I let go my attachment of special people like my husband or my kids, my family, all of you people here in the room that mean so much to me, that have been supportive and loving in my spiritual growth. Do I have an attachment to that? Do I really see myself letting go of every person, concept, or thing? Was another question from the reading this morning. And what is it I don't want to let go? What is it I don't want to let go? And what have I put my faith in? Were the questions that I asked you guys to consider. I've certainly considered them, and I'll just share with you a couple of things that I don't want to let go of. I didn't want to let go of my pet, and I think Regina mentioned that this morning, as I know her pet was just laid down to rest, gosh, not too long ago. My pet was laid to rest not too long ago. Did it seem like I wanted that to happen? Not at all. But still, a choice had to be made. Was there sadness? Of course. Do I still seem to miss my Moses? I do. I get teary-eyed just thinking about some other things that I don't want to let go. I don't want to let go of my comfy life. I've often heard Regina say that she doesn't have like big problems. You know, some people have big problems. They have financial issues, they have health issues, they have relationship issues, they have going on all the time. I'm not one of those people. I'm more like Regina in that I have a comfortable life. I have a wonderful husband. I have kids I love. Are there, you know, issues with them here and there? Of course. That's just part of everyday, ordinary life. I like a comfortable life. I'll admit it. I like not worrying about finances. I hear people here in the room. I've heard Regina talk about when she left Boston and followed guidance, and how afraid, how fearful she was. At the same time, she trusted that this is what I need to do. And I've often asked myself, you know, is that something that I could do? And I really can't answer that in a truthful way because it's not my experience, but I've asked myself that question. And it seems like I don't want to let go of a comfortable life. I don't want to let go of routine or structure. I don't want to let go of financial security. I don't want to let go of health. I don't want to let go of family. Even the idea of vanity came up when Regina this morning said we're getting ready to convert over to a new platform called Zoom and that we would be able to see each other. I was like, like almost cringing inside, truly, because it's like, man, you know, if I want to show up with greasy hair and a bandana on and in my pajamas for church, nobody can see me, so it doesn't really matter. But if I, and I'm just being straight up about this, but if I am in this new platform, and even as a trustee, I didn't realize, we had our first meeting, I don't know, a couple of weeks, or last week, I guess it was, I can't keep track of time anymore, but everybody was on camera but me, not because I didn't want to, but because I didn't know how to do it. I've since figured it out. I just am completely ignorant about that kind of stuff, but I've since figured it out. But I had this like, ugh, I don't even want to look at myself. I don't even want to look at myself. I don't want to look at this mug anymore. And it's, you know, as we get older and things change, it's like, I just don't even want to look at myself some days. It's like I'd rather not look in the mirror. I'd rather not not see the signs of aging. I'd rather not see my jowls. I'd rather not see my glasses hanging off the end of my nose. I'd rather not see any of that. So it seems like I don't really want to let go of an idea of who I used to be. You know, an attractive, and some people would say you're still attractive, but if that's not how you see yourself, if that's not what you believe about yourself, it doesn't matter how many times somebody says that to you. If you don't believe it, you don't believe it. It doesn't mean that it's what I believe is true. It's just one of the ways that personhood or false self or ego keeps the loop going. This is who you are. You're not as attractive as you used to be. As a matter of fact, these are all the reasons why. You know? And it's just one of those crazy, crazy ideas that I believe in when it's not even true. It has nothing to do with the truth of who I really am. It's simply forgetting the truth of who I am and placing some sort of value in a body that for everyone will, you know, deteriorate and get old and shift and change and, you know, fall apart or at least droop to some degree until it's laid down and it's of no use anymore. And so I think to myself, you know, why would I value that to begin with? Why would I value that to begin with, knowing full well the end outcome for the body, mind, personality, the persona? Why would I value that? The other question was, you know, what is it I trust in? And again, my radical honesty said that I have partial trust, as if there's such a thing. You know, there really isn't such a thing in truth. You either trust or you don't trust. But my first response was, well, I partially trust maybe, maybe, but not fully trust in anyone or anything. I'm just being honest. I still don't. I made a pact with myself when I was a kid, I think. And I don't remember, you know, like physically sitting down and writing about it or saying it to myself, but it was in the mind that this idea of Father, you know, trusting God, praying. When I prayed as a kid, I prayed for something. Like I used to pray for my father to stop drinking. And that never happened. He's now 86 years old. I don't have a relationship with him. I haven't seen him in 41 years, but I know that he's still drinking through family that I speak to. And so it was always associated, that idea of trust started with my own father, my own, you know, dad, and praying to God the Father and not having that prayer answered in the form that I asked. Now, I don't, you know, blame myself for a child, as a child asking for something like that. I simply didn't know better. And thought that that was a quote legitimate prayer. And really, you know, I recognize now that the prayer of the heart is only that I know myself, that only that I know the truth. And that same knowing is my father's same knowing, that even though the form of my father hasn't changed at all, now I do trust. I do trust that he's not who I think he is, that he never was who I thought he was, nor am I. The other things, you know, simple things that I think I trust are that, you know, after the darkness of the evening and the night, I trust that there will be light in the morning. I trust, you know, random things like a crocodile is not going to sing like a bird. I trust that the sun is warm. I trust that water is wet. I trust that a red stop sign means don't go. I mean, there are things that I trust, and then there are things that I say I partially trust. Yet, trust. On a human level, is tested over and over and over and over again. For instance, one of the things I wrote down was, I trust my husband will return when he leaves to go out of town on a business trip. And I gave that some further thought, and what I discovered was that that wasn't true. And the reason that isn't true is because I could recollect those passing moments, or maybe even minutes, not a lot of time, but I'll have a passing thought go through that I attach to, and I will think, what if something happened that he didn't come home? The plane crashed, he had an accident on the road. You know, the mind goes to imagining. And right away, I mean, generally right away, after some anxiety, you know, immediate anxiety, I happen to like my husband, he's my best friend, and so I look forward to him coming home. So to consider those kinds of thoughts and give them any sort of believing attention creates suffering. So this idea of letting go of dreams shouldn't be so bloody scary. The dreams are the scary piece of it. The attachment is the scary piece of it. The partial trust is the scary piece of it. The expectation of what trust is from past definitions leads to suffering. And to experience that on a physical level, on an emotional level, is unpleasant. And even in meditations, where Karen asks us to notice as thoughts arise without attachment and continue to turn within, not trying to push away any sort of emotion that might be triggered as a result of, like, God, what if something happened to my husband? Because I feel dependent on him for companionship, for love, for friendship, for finances, for God, just being my buddy, just being my friend. Every time I have a thought that is fearful around him, that's exactly what Hebrews is speaking to us about. Can I be happy no matter what? No matter what? Happy when my dog dies, happy when my husband dies, happy if I die, happy if I don't wake up in this lifetime to the truth of who I really am. Can I still be happy? Happy if I lose all my money, happy if my routines are upset, happy if my health goes, happy if my hair falls out. Can I be happy? And for me, and I'm just being honest, I would have to say not yet. I don't know that for sure, because the only thing that's really happened on that list is, my health is very good at the moment. I've had a few little moments that tested that, but it didn't seem like I was very happy while that was going on. When I had to put my pet down, it didn't feel like joy. I rested with what I was experiencing, but I honestly can't say that I felt happy. So Hebrews does seem like a tough section. To look at your own life and ask these questions. And I'm wondering if any of you this morning, I had asked you all to consider these questions as well. And if you want to take the mic and share at all from any of the things that maybe I didn't cover that you trust in or that you feel would totally upset your happiness, and knock you off track, the things that you still desire, the things that you don't want to let go of, I would be really happy to give over the mic. If I don't know if you type on the board, I will see if anybody wants to share. Otherwise, I will solving problems. You don't want to let go of that, Jay, of solving problems? You still want to feel like you're in control of solving problems? Is that what you're earning money? Yeah. You don't want to let go of earning money. Yeah, and be that idea of being self-sufficient and being appreciated. That's another one Jay's sharing. You don't, nobody likes to feel unappreciated, especially if you've done a good job and then somebody doesn't pay you. I know Jay had that experience of being unappreciated. I definitely can relate to feeling unappreciated. Anybody else? Things we don't want to give up, things we don't want to, things we value. Things we value. What do you value? And we know what we value by what we do too. What is it I do in a day? If I say I value awakening above all else, are my actions in the day reflective of that thought, or am I just lying to myself? And that's a question that we can each ask ourselves in our own life. I'm not asking you to share that with me here. I'm just asking myself that question. What is it I really value? Who am I kidding? And why would I want to kid myself if, in fact, my truest desire is to wake up to the truth of myself, to experience that in a direct way, not just talking about it or sharing here in the room or feeling holy for a minute. In that song that Regina shared in the Italy group, the New Italy group that she recently formed, there was a song, and the guy says, "Everything is holy ground." You know, when I went to Sunday school to learn the golden rule, and then you leave church, and it doesn't any doesn't feel like holy ground anymore. And we just talked about that with Inner Ramana as well. It's like the questioner was asking Inner Ramana, well, what happens when I leave the ashram? I'm good to go while I'm here, while there's a support system around me, while everybody's doing the same thing, and we're all kind of got our toes and our eyes pointed on the prize, which is awakening. What happens when I leave here? What happens then? What happens when I leave church on Sunday? Is it just an hour in church? Yeah, holy now. Yeah, that was the name of the song by Peter Mayer. When you go to church and you're feeling all spiritual and full of it, and then you leave and somebody says something to you and right away you're offended, or you see yourself defending yourself, or you've just left church like 5 minutes ago. As I look back on all the years that I went to church and had that happen and never really even gave it a second thought, that there seemed to be two personas. One that was in church, in reverence and devotion, truly. And then when I'd leave church, there was no discipline beyond that in my everyday life. This was before the course and before what I'm doing now. But when I look back on that, I'm like, wow, how shallow was that devotion? That I was so easily knocked off track, where my toes were not only pointing forward, I don't know where they were pointing. I didn't know what was up. But there was enough of a willingness and enough of a faith in the unseen, the unknown. But it was still there. I've never been able to shake that, ever. And that is the pure awareness that we just did a meditation on. That is the true security. And I've come to know that more intimately. I've come to trust that more intimately. I've come to place my attention there with devotion more often. And I know that will not end for me. I've tried to make it end here and there. I've tried to give it up. I've tried to say, oh, just forget it. Like Regina was sharing, Jacqueline, in her speaker spotlight was, well, had the doubt thought, you know, maybe other people can awaken, but I can't. I'm not going to be that one. That just isn't true. It just isn't true because, as Inner Ramana, as not Inner Ramana, but in the teachings of Inner Ramana, it said, we're already awake. It already is the state of my existence. I exist. And that's what the meditation did as well. I exist. I exist. I hear the sounds. At the same time, I feel the heat in my body. I hear the drone of the television in the other room. At the same time, my throat feels dry. I hear the silence. At the same time, I hear the air conditioner. That sense of quiet in which all the noise occurs and all the sensation occurs is the foundation. Yes, I do want you to verbally share. Yes, I do. And I will give up the mic right now, Sharon, to you. Go ahead. Thank you.
Okay, what I want to share is that I'm listening to you, and this is something that I have recognized through guidance and through myself, you know, guidance is myself, but through my experience. There was an expectation that I wasn't allowed to cry. There's an expectation, because I'm not awake if I cry. Yet I have awareness is everywhere for me now. And what happened was I read one of Regina's tips about Jamie, and she had tears. Now, she didn't get hysterical, but grieving tears. And being a Course student, this is what I found reading A Course in Miracles, and I'm not saying it's not a great teaching. It is. However, it taught us more that, you know, being happy and being loving is an expectation. We are always in truth. We are always in truth. And, you know, awake awareness is what we are. But as the human, if we want to cry, there's an acceptance in that. If we doubt, there's an acceptance in that. But yet we can still do the loving all method. And I think this is coming from my experience. I had very high expectations of awakening, and I still don't call myself awake because I don't know what that even means, except that, you know, we're all awake, and that's what Inner Ramana was saying. Yes, because we are awake awareness. But as the human, I don't know anyone that doesn't have, you know, I was reading a book Ramash wrote about Nisargadatta, and he was saying how concerned he was about his daughter, you know, when he died. And he said, what do you think the people would think of me? Now, I don't know if that really happened, but that was in the book. And so I can't say that if my children, like, you know, everyone that knows me knows I'm very connected to one child that has addiction issues. I would never say I'm not going to cry if he would go back and use, you know, because I just don't know. But I do know by reading what Regina had written and then her teaching today about the moment, about staying in the moment, because everything is an experience. There's nothing here, nothing here that continues. Not one moment is the same as the next one. Only when we're sleeping do we feel that. So what I do is encourage myself to keep going and realize that, you know, I'm good enough to awaken, whatever that means. But I know enough now when I hear, you know, you speak that you are in a, you're hard on yourself. You know, you're allowing your personal yourself to decide that you should feel a certain way. And that's an expectation. You're in truth no matter where you are, no matter what happens. And loving that all method is accepting it. So that's all I wanted to say, because I hear you with strong clarity. When I listen on the radio sometimes on Wednesdays, I'm not always in the room. And I don't know, I know that you know a lot more, but I think that you're a perfectionist as a person. That's just my observation. You know, I'm not a perfectionist. Never was, never will be. So that's why I guess I'm like, you know, able to let myself, allow myself to feel my feelings and know I'm in truth. And then to hear this message today with Regina, I had joy most of the day. I really did. I was so excited to just meet the moment. But does that mean that I'm not going to cry? Or does that mean that if my husband would die, you know, he had a stroke, you know, a little while ago, I wasn't jumping for joy. I was upset, but I also went back to clarity, went back to the space. So in any case, I'm going to drop the mic and thank you, Kathy, for sharing from your heart. It takes a lot of courage to do that, and I really appreciate it.
Thanks for sharing, Sharon. And yes, I am hard on myself in many ways. And you're probably pretty accurate on the perfectionistic aspect, but that only applies to certain things. If I could give that perfectionism over to the Holy Spirit and and Holy Spirit is myself, have that be used for a different purpose than I use it for, I could be good to go with knowing myself in direct experience, for sure. The interesting thing is the book that I've been sharing from, There Is Neither I Nor Other Than I, There Is Only, there's a section called Being Forewarned Is Being Forearmed. And it says nearly everyone wants his or her life to improve in some way. And very often, you know deeply within yourself that for real improvement to occur, you are yourself going to have to make either some radical or drastic changes in your present lifestyle or in some of the patterns of your life. And I had started off earlier by talking about not wanting to let go of routines, or in this book, it's being called patterns. And I've also heard Regina talk about that, where, you know, when you have resistance to saying yes to a calling, for instance, like I'll give just an example. When the call is put out to the congregation to take a teaching spot, and the ego's like, oh no, I am not gonna share in any way, shape, or form. I'm too nervous about that. I have trepidation. I'm gonna look like a fool. I don't know that I know what to say. I might say the wrong. I mean, all kinds of things can go through the mind that would tell you, don't do that. Don't do that. At the same time, her recommendation was do that. Do that very thing. Go ahead and take that leap of faith. And that's a perfect opportunity to sit with yourself, honor yourself, ask Spirit to guide you while you have the mic. Speak through me, use me as a portal. help me to be honest. Let others point. I mean, I want people to point my mistakes out to me. It's other people see them more clearly than I do. We all know how that is. I mean, other people can see our mistakes more clearly than we ourselves see our mistakes. So why would I be so defensive when somebody's trying to help me see that I can change my mind and end the suffering? And it's only because the ego says, you know, how dare you? And it wants to protect that little self. It wants to continue that loop of who I think I am. It doesn't want to be open to other possibilities because of fear. Fear of, like Regina spoke to this morning, that sense that there's going to be some sort of loss. There's going to be some sacrifice asked of me. It's not going to be so comfy or cushy anymore. But this is saying, again, very often you know deeply within yourself that for real improvement to occur, you yourself are going to have to make either some radical or drastic changes in your present lifestyle or in some of the patterns of your life. So when it comes time to really look at yourself, you must be willing to tell the truth about whether you are willing to go through with, to completion, the necessary changes in you that will be required to produce the changes you desire in your world. It always has to occur in me, every single time. It's never about the world. It's never about my husband. It's never about my kids. It's never about, you know, my friends. It's never about any of that. It's always about me. And it says, and as mentioned in the last chapter, of course, which we didn't read, keeping your agreements with yourself plays a major part in this. I haven't read this yet in the room, but the section previous to this is called Agreement, the basis for making your life work. And it's just that recognition of how everything is an agreement, even the code, what's the other word for the code that we use? The flow. Where thoughts come from, you know, outer space somewhere. Yeah, not the flow. I don't know why the word is escaping me. We use it a million times. At any rate, you know, when we place our attention on thought, which is not a personal thing, it's not a personal thing at all, and give it our believing attention and believe it to be our truth, my individual truth, it's never true. It's never true. It's just a piece of the script passing through my mind. It has nothing to do with a me. The only time it becomes a me thing is when I decide I want to attach myself to it. But this is saying, you know, we have these agreements with ourselves. I'm going to agree to show up here at 8 o'clock. I'm going to agree to be the person that reads on Sunday because I agreed to do that. I've agreed to share on Wednesday, so I'm going to do that. You honor your agreements. It says, when you work with methods, techniques, or programs of radical transformation or realization, which actually do work to produce real transformation in the quality of your life, then you can expect to come into a period of radical and intense adjustment or readjustment. And that's what Hebrews also is talking about. It's not always, we've talked about that in the room a million times. It's not always going to be hunky-dory. Sometimes our guidance will be to do something or say something or not say something, as Regina shared in the previous hour, where, you know, the mind is screaming, you know, reply to that, say what you think, tell them what's on your mind, let them know how you feel, don't hold back. That voice, the readjustment is that you notice that and you stay silent. That's the adjustment. Meanwhile, the mind might still be screaming. You need to stand up for yourself. You need to speak your peace. P-I-E-C-E. And there is no P-E-A-C-E in that peace. And the readjustment is important. Otherwise, we stay in the loop. And so again, when we're working with the loving all method, whatever it is you use, if you can't love it, you can at least accept it. If you can't accept it, you at least allow it, because it's happening as it is anyway. And any sort of resistance to what is suffering. And so these methods, these techniques, programs, the radical transformations, the realizations that occur along the way, they do work to produce the real transformation, but there's going to be periods of adjustment, just like Hebrews said. Things will change. We will be giving up our attachments to persons, concepts, my pets, my perceptions, my emotions, my thoughts, and the actions that follow from belief, believing attention in those things. So this intense adjustment or readjustment, that is, especially as long as you're still identified with your body mind as being yourself and with your conditioned patterns of thought, which continue to rise up out of the past. You may even begin to question yourself about going on with the work that's required of you by questioning either the program material, the teaching itself, or the teacher, and perhaps even everyone that's involved in the teaching. This may include questioning even the validity, veracity, integrity, or benefit of what you've already gained or realized about yourself, even though it has already benefited you. And I mean, how true is that in my experience? I can say, I can raise my hand and say, I've been that questioning person, even with experiences that have shown the truth of teachings, the truth of transformation, the truth of techniques, the truth of programs, methods, whatever you want to call it. I've experienced the results of that directly. So I can't deny that has happened, yet I can still point my toes in a different direction and decide, hey, I don't want to walk down that road anymore. I want to turn this way for a minute, or a day, or a week, or a year, or whatever we decide. And the questioning aspect of that would be the ego. You know, like, what are you doing? Do you really believe? Do you really have faith? You can't see what you, that's what our lesson a couple of days or so ago was talking about. What do you have faith in? We have faith in what we can see mostly, what we can feel mostly, what we see outside of ourselves mostly. But can you have faith in what you can't see? In what you can't see? Do you honor the self you can't see with the body's eyes, with the mind's thinking? That's where all suffering. That's where all suffering. Having faith in that is faith in nothing. It's faith. You're applying faith, but it's faith in nothing. And what do we risk by turning our attention and our toes, as well as our eyes? What do we risk? What do we really risk by deciding this is more important? This really is a worthwhile endeavor. This really does make the most sense. This really is something that I can I'm going to say apply myself to and see results. Results in my relationships, results in how I feel, results in how improvements, really. I mean, it really is an improvement in the quality of a human life when you know you're not that human. It's helpful because the rest of it has not been helpful. It's been so temporary, and because it comes and goes so quickly, why not? Why not turn that way? Why not? I can still experience, quote, bad things and be happy. Why not turn in that direction? Why not place my belief there? That is the truth. Why not experiment that? Why not be curious about that? Why not try? Just give it a go. And I see that my time is up, so I appreciate you all spending this hour with me, and I am happy to serve in this way. I will give up the mic. Thanks so much, and have a nice evening.